folks. Welcome back to Who Booked This, the podcast. I'm Steven.
I'm JR, and we're still workshopping the title.
Yeah, one day.
Live on air.
Live on air. So this was one of my choices. It's an IWA Japan House Deathmatch. And it features Shoji Nakamaki and someone else versus Bob Bergel and the Crypt Keeper.
Yes.
I'd never seen this before, but
Nor have I.
I used the old YouTube machine and I searched IWA Japan Deathmatch, and this is one that came up. And it looked right up our alley. So, Jer, what the fuck is a house deathmatch?
I'm honestly still not sure. I watched it. So first of all, like, this match is bonkers. I mean, you may have gathered that, I guess, by a house death match. I mean, we'll get into it, but like, the opening of this match is two dudes spray painting the words "fuck you" onto a house. And then hitting the house with like hammers and mallets and stuff.
And a crazy guy in a mask walking down the street waving a barbed wire baseball bat.
Yeah. But like in the YouTube comments of the video I watched for this, they said it was Jose Estrada from The Most Brickless, which is amazing.
I hope it is. I don't know who the Crypt Keeper was. Do you know?
No, I mean, I guess that at various points, Bob Bergel was also the Crypt Keeper.
But he's the other dude in this, isn't he?
But he's the other dude. So, so maybe it was, you know, I'm just going to assume it was because
a Los Barriqua. Yeah, it says, when they search it, it comes out as Jose Estrada Jr. So, yeah, maybe it's one of the Barriquas. That's fun.
Maybe. Yeah. Nice little tie-in. But,
yeah.
So, yeah, the Crypt Keeper runs up. He has a barbed wire baseball bat. And, you know, can you imagine? So this is a dude in a Crypt Keeper mask, like from Tales of the Crypt, right?
Yep.
And a baseball uniform and an IWA Japan Crypt Keeper t-shirt.
Yeah, that was boss. I want one of those.
Yeah. Carrying a barbed wire bat, just like running through suburbia to this house that he then starts to destroy.
And you forgot there's some awesome dramatic scary music too.
Oh yeah, there's so okay. So I have a question. Yeah. You may know, you may not. It doesn't matter. Do you know, is this like a fan edit or was this match presented just like this, like we watched it?
Oh boy. Well, okay. I'm going to go to this review from Puroso Central written by Reed Benson. And he's watching a commercial tape, and it's matches on it. So let's see if he mentions that shit. why don't you explain a little bit more about this match while I do some reading on air?
Yeah. So I mean, just so you guys, the first thing I would say is like you have to watch it. I can't do justice describing this match, but like the best note that I put for this is like it's like the wrestling match equivalent of like when you see those scripts that are written entirely by predictive keyboards. it's like someone gave a predictive keyboard like match descriptions of Lucha Underground seasons and Japanese deathmatch wrestling. And like, this is what it came up with. And then somebody like made that, like based purely on that. That's the only way I can describe it. So these two guys are destroying this house for like 2 straight minutes, by the way, before anyone does anything to stop
him. Can I explain what happens after that?
Respond. Every door and window on this house has been destroyed.
Yeah, and you have people outside who are running away in fear. And I think my favorite moment, well, one of my early favorite moments. So they're destroying the shit out of this house forever. And finally, like, Nakamaki, or how do you say that? Is that right?
Let's assume Nakamaki, yeah.
Nakamaki. He's like, sitting at a table playing cards or something, and he just gets up like, holy shit, what's happening? And then, yeah. Like, runs outside and attacks the guy who's fucking destroying the house. And then a bell rings. Like, the match starts.
Yeah. This is like, it's like a World Star video, but a Japanese early 90s professional wrestling match.
Yeah. I did my research, and he doesn't mention any of the music and shit, but that doesn't mean it's not there. Because I could see someone reviewing this and just talking about the match, because, you know, that's what people do.
Yeah.
So I mentioned the neighbors running away in fear. This was one of the highlights to this match to me is every, like, couple minutes, you get shots of people watching.
Yeah.
You'd have children. You'd have women running away in fear. At one point, I believe you see someone talking to a police officer.
Uh-huh. That does happen, yeah.
And I think there's a team of people in, like, orange or red suits. I guess they were there to clean up afterwards? Or were they riot police? I was unsure.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe they were the contractors that were originally contracted to destroy this house. And these wrestlers just beat them to it.
Maybe. So that was fun. And, like, every couple minutes you'd have these reactions. Some cheering, some scared.
Yeah. There's one amazing reaction where, like, the wrestlers tumble outside and there's, like, everyone is sort of, like, reviled except for this one little girl who is a total blood mark and is, like, 100% into it.
And there's a great reaction at the end, but I'll save that till we talk about the finish.
Yeah. There's a ton to talk about in this. There really is. So, the first thing that I wrote down is, the Crypt Keeper gains entry into this house and they start fighting. And, like, the first thing he does is just, like, shoot punches the other guy in the face. Like, he clobbers him. It's great. Every punch and kick in this match has the same sound effect.
Okay, I gotta talk about the sound effects here, because, like, they're fighting for a while, and there's dramatic music, and I think maybe some sound effects. And then, after a while, so we've got these shit thrown into walls, you got a dude getting dunked in a toilet, you got all this stuff.
Somebody throws TV, just, like, whips the TV across the room.
Yeah, but at one point, an airplane flies by, and then the dramatic music stops.
Yes.
And then it's just – so this is where the match might have went into a little bit of a negative territory, because from there out until this weird point near the end, it's just grunting and hitting sounds. Like, it's very uncomfortable to watch for a while.
Yeah. So the Crypt Keeper, who I'm going to assume is Jose Estrada, the Crypt Keeper, it is amazing to me. You can watch this match and he grunts in the exact same tone for the entire match, no matter what he is doing. It's like the consistency of it is like a Super Nintendo fighting game where, like, when you did a special move, Ryu would always say the same thing during the animation. like his, anytime he was doing anything, he would do the same exact grunt to the point where it's like, I was wondering if the grunt was the effect, but it's, like, almost too well-timed that I don't think it was. I think it was just that consistent. And it's a weird grunt. It's not, like, an effort grunt. It's like, oh, like, over and over again.
It's very uncomfortable to listen to, really.
It is. Yeah, it is off-putting.
While my dog scratches up the couch to try to find a comfortable spot to lay down.
The airplane spot is amazing. It's like one of, we need to talk about that at length because, so they,
what go, is it?
They're fighting, right? And then all of a sudden they cut to an airplane flying overhead with airplane sound. Yeah. And then they slowly crossfade back to them fighting.
It's, and the music ends at that point.
Yeah, and like the music fades out. It's like, it's very artistic in its own way, but it's bizarre. And like, you can't know what purpose it serves, but man alive, it's something else.
Yeah.
I really love it.
Yeah. And then can we talk about the second time? There's three times the music comes in to this.
Yeah.
So the second time was very bizarre. When there's
like a bizarre voiceover?
Yes! So finally, at one point, all the four men end up in the same room. I guess a bedroom. I don't know. Yeah. And then it goes to slow motion.
And
it goes from, so I might have been able to think that the strikes and all that stuff were like regular sounds. But at this point, it comes clearly sound effects.
Yeah.
And then there's just music starts playing. And for the next couple minutes of the match, there's a voiceover.
Yeah. So I asked somebody on Twitter, like I asked my Twitter followers, I was like, hey, does anyone speak Japanese? Because I was super curious what they were saying during this voiceover. And only one person responded. So I sent it to them and they said that they didn't speak a ton of Japanese. And it was a bit too complicated for them to translate.
Oh.
But they said that the early portions of it, whomever is talking, I assume it's one of the people in the match, is saying, look at my face.
What? So it's like, this is like Nakamaki is like describing what's going on in his head during the time. This is happening.
Yeah, maybe. Let's go with that. I mean, yeah, that's the most amazing thing. So the other thing about the slow motion shot, it's about midway through the match. It's like, hey, it's 9 minutes in. So just go to this slow motion shot. But nothing about what's happening on screen
is different than what was happening before.
It was exactly the same. It was the same spot that they did like 400 straight times.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on here. And as great as those two music moments were, I think my favorite was the ending music moment.
Uh-huh.
So the match ends. We'll talk about the finish in a couple minutes, but.
Well, I've got a lot to say.
Yeah. We'll go back to it. I just want to talk about all the music stuff in a row here.
Yeah.
So the bell rings. It's over. And then the winners, they exit the building. Right?
One, two, three!
And this, like, super glorious, victorious music starts playing.
Yes.
And, like, there's applause, and then there's, like, game show fake applause that goes over top.
So there's like they cut to a shot of the crowd, which is like maybe 15 people lightly applauding, and then over top of that they play like what sounds to be like award show reception speech applause, like something you'd hear at the Oscars, you know?
It was huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that music was so victorious.
Oh yeah. No, it's like Kurt Angle's theme.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Oh boy. This was amazing. Okay, so we'll talk about what happens at the end and afterwards, because I think afterwards
is a lot. There's a lot going on.
Afterwards is a lot. Oh, okay, wait a second. There's more music. I forgot. So afterwards, with that stuff that we'll talk about in a little bit.
I mean, there's like a credit sequence.
There's a credit sequence with a voiceover with highlights of what's happening, which we'll get back to. But man, this is like one of the best uses of music in match I can remember.
No, like, I will say for this match, like, this match is super ambitious. Like, yeah. It makes no sense, and it's stupid, but it's ambitious in a way that I, like, have to respect, you know? Like, it's not ambitious in the same way that, like, people say a Shawn Michaels match is ambitious or something like that, where it's just overwrought. Like
Dragon Gate or something.
Right, like, this is trying to do something that not a lot of wrestling does, you know? This is ambitious in the same way that, like, Wrestling Society X or Lucha Underground or something is ambitious.
Or that, you know? Randy Orton Bray Wyatt match where they had maggots in the ring.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah, or their other one where they also fought in a house for no reason.
Yeah. Maybe we'll come back to that one at some point.
Yeah, we'll have to do. Although that match is super.
I don't really remember it.
Yeah.
So this match has a lot of people throwing people in the walls. Yeah. A lot uncomfortable amount of biting.
Yeah, there's a lot of biting.
It's like I've seen biting in wrestling, but this is like it's uncomfortable. It's too much.
If you like a spot where a dude is on the floor and then another dude sort of pushes a door onto him and like makes like a door person floor sandwich, this is the match for you. Because that spot happens like 400 times.
Yep.
Yeah.
What were some of your other weapons that you enjoyed in this match? Because I have a few that like, I have a few that I don't know what they were and I'd like to ask you about them.
So first of all, like we have to talk about Bob Barrigale's, like, let's talk about Bob Barrigale in general. Like, so this is a dude who I had never watched a match of knowingly before today. And he is like a handsome, in shape man.
But like, his outfit.
Yeah, well, he's like dressed like the Tongan kid, basically.
He's got like, you know, like leopard or cheetah striped shorts and a normal outfit. But his t-shirt is like a white t-shirt with a black question mark on it.
Yep, that is his t-shirt. Yeah, that's his street fight outfit. His regular wrestling clothes plus a t-shirt that he bought at like some market.
What do you think? What do you think the question mark t-shirt was like meant to him?
I am not prepared to answer that question. I mean, maybe. He just didn't know what he was walking into, you know?
Yeah. Well, I have a question. Was this a planned match? Or was, like, Nakamaki and his partner just hanging out with a referee and some cameramen, and then these two monsters broke into their house?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like either one is equally likely. yeah. But, like, Bob Barrigale, like, I guess when I was watching this match, I sort of was, like, shocked that he wasn't a bigger star, because people like him during that like early to mid 90s period in wrestling that looked like him and that worked internationally, like generally have a lot of I was like looking up, and it's so bizarre that a guy like this didn't have a bigger career. Except, I guess he did. He just worked under, like, horror movie masks the entire time. Like, the Crypt Keeper and Freddy Krueger and stuff.
Oh, okay. Which is
the most insane thing I think I've ever heard, you know?
IWGP had, they had Jason, they had Freddy Krueger, they had the Crypt Keeper. They had all the horror monster movies of the time.
I think that the guy who sets out to be a professional wrestler and like looks like him and decides that his best course of action is to like wear like one piece jumpsuits and horror movie masks. Like that speaks to his lack of judgment and actually ties in and is some solid character work in terms of the weapons that he hit his opponent
with. So
because he at one point tries to choke out his opponent with what I think is a leek.
I thought it was celery.
Yeah, it could be celery. It is certainly a vegetable that is in the onion or leafy green category.
I was unsure, and I expected you to be like, no, it's a, you know, a something, right? No. But no, you said it was a vegetable too.
Straight
so
up I'm vegetable, good. Yeah. And then I also think later somebody else uses another vegetable, but I couldn't see it very well.
Okay, first, yeah, the second time, okay. At first I thought it was a parsnip.
Okay.
But then I got a better look at it, and it was either a piece of wood with spikes hanging out of it, or someone had put spikes into a parsnip.
Yeah, that's fine. So one time at a AIW show years and years ago, they had a fans bring the weapons match, and I brought a sub sandwich wrapped in barbed wire.
Whoa. So,
which I always thought was a great weapon. But I assume that we're going to, my headcanon moving forward is going to be that this is a vegetable with spikes.
I hope so. That would make me happy. Parsnips are good, man. You shouldn't waste them.
I love parsnips. Yeah. I make a parsnip soup that I really love. It's like one of my favorite.
I like to, put parsnips in curry.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a little bit of curry in this. It's like you do parsnips and potatoes and you boil them down with a bit of curry. Mm-hmm. And then you, like put a food processor in it to make it into like a cream and add in a bit of cream to.
Sounds good.
It is.
Boy.
We should do a wrestling and cooking podcast.
Yeah, we should start that up. We could make a recipe that's based on each match.
For each match that we do? Why don't we just do that for the next few weeks?
We'll see how that goes. There was one other weapon I want to touch over. And this got a holy shit out of me and I freaked out.
Uh-huh.
And it involves sound effects. And everything. This was the most giant fireball in like the history of wrestling.
Yes. Yeah.
What the fuck?
It's awesome. Yeah. I didn't even take outs on it because I think I was marking out so much when it happened.
It was intense.
Yeah.
Like it took up like the whole screen, the fire.
Yes.
Oh, how cool would it have been?
I'm shocked that it didn't. Like cause a fire in the home, you know?
If they had the like money of the WWE and like the rest of the match, the building was on fire while they were fighting.
Yeah.
And it was like burning down around them while they're, that would have been so good.
Oh yeah. That would have been great. Well, like I will say that like one of the coolest things in this match, is there's points within the first few minutes where the two dudes are fighting on two different levels.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, one of them, they're filming the people on the first floor, but you can hear the people on the second floor. And whenever someone takes a bump, drywall is raining down on the people on the first floor. And it is a tremendously visceral effect put together, you know?
That was beautiful. I really like that part a lot.
Yeah.
One more weapon, and this one confused me more than the vegetables, to be honest.
The wicker basket?
The wicker basket. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So they use it a couple of different times. Yeah. Yeah. Like they go back to it. Like multiple people use this tiny wicker basket that's like the size of,
the top of the head because he puts it on his head like it's a crown.
Yeah. Like there's nothing about it that could make me ever think that was painful.
But they used it like they treated it like it was a cheese grater.
Yes, that's exactly what they did. But it had no effect whatsoever. That's really amazing. But I will say that like once they use the wicker basket, and then also there's like an ear of corn that gets thrown in there.
Oh
eventually.
Yeah, I forgot about that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Then they start to sort of ramp it up a little bit, and Bear Gale uses like there's a piece of broken glass that he finally uses, and I'm like, why didn't none of you morons think of this like 15 minutes earlier when you broke it via the window, you know?
Yeah. See, at that point though, like, so this was to me like a cheesy 80s horror movie, right?
Yes.
Like this is when, you know, the people run up the stairs to get out of the room because and they're idiots. But at like that point, it became like a Saw snuff film. Like, yes. It was disgusting at that point.
Yeah, it's like a very close-up shot. There's also, like, there's a close-up shot of one of the dudes just hitting the other dude in the face with a brick.
There is.
Yeah, like, over and over again. Like, I will say, if you are concerned about safety of wrestlers now that we know about post-traumatic concussion syndromes and things like that, this is probably not a match that you want to watch. Because there is a lot of head trauma going on.
Oh man. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but there's the brick leads to an absolutely great sequence where the dude is getting hammered in the face with this brick, right?
Yeah.
And he suddenly comes back, you know, like a Hogan, like House of Fire comeback and beats up his opponent. And then he throws the brick down out of the way and then DDTs his opponent onto a door that is laying down on the floor. But he himself lands back first onto the brick.
Yeah.
Which seems like it would hurt way more than DDTing your opponent into the brick itself.
Yeah. That wasn't smart, was it?
No. No, it was not. but, like, there's some great sound effects in this match. And I don't know, this joke may be a little too obscure or out there, but keeping with the horror movie motif, I want to see a fan edit of Barbarian Sound Studio, but all the Foley work they do for that movie is instead for this match, instead of the Giallo film that they're making.
Yep, that went over my head.
You got to watch it. It's good.
Okay.
Maybe one person that listens to the podcast will.
And that's really what this podcast is for.
That's what all podcasts are about.
The top one guy.
The one guy.
So, you want to get to the finish here, or is there anything else you want to go over?
No, I think I've said most of my piece. But let's, you start with the finish and I'll add in what I can.
Okay. So, throughout this match, there is no near falls. No one attempts a cover. No one attempts a cover. You don't even know what the rules are, to be honest.
I will. Yeah. The rules are very, very unfair. I will say, that there was a point, like maybe halfway through the match, where I thought to myself, like, why have there been no submission attempts? Which is an insane thing to think. I readily admit. but then out of nowhere, one of them puts on a figure four leg lock.
Yep, he does.
And almost as if they heard me thinking it, right?
Yeah, I forgot about the figure four. That was pretty good.
It looks so stupid. They're just in this barren room with like cracked walls. He's like, I'm gonna put four leg lock back right now.
And so he has a great escape to the leg lock. He rips a piece of the wall off and hits him with it.
Oh, yeah. And just hits the dude in the face.
I like that. Yeah, so that I guess that might have been a near fall, the figure
that
four.
That counts. That's the only sort of, like, thin threat of the entire match.
Yeah. So we get to the end. Dude flips over a coffee table, breaks off all the legs. Yeah. And he hits a DDT on the coffee table, which, you know, looks like it might be the finish, but the dude kicks out. He just gets up and gives him another DDT on the coffee table, and that's it. That was a very odd psychology moment, I think.
So, again, I don't want to harp too much on the sound effects, but when he's kicking the legs off the coffee table, every time he kicks one of the legs, it makes the same exact sound, and it's amazing. It's like it is not even like the sound of wood breaking. It's like a slightly different sound than when he kicks a person. Like this is like the 60s Batman TV show of wrestling matches.
Oh.
Like if someone put up like the POW graphics during this, it would not feel out of place at all.
And how awesome would that be?
It would be great. Someone make that, please.
Yeah. So they win. They go outside. We had that music like before we talked about. And Crypt Keeper like is pissed.
Yeah, super mad.
He's pissed. He runs. He like storms away and he yells some shit. I don't know what he yelled, but he was pissed. And so the match is over. He, you know, they celebrate with the crowd. He gives a little promo. I don't know what he said in this victory speech, but I'm sure it was great. And then we go to the credits and we get video package highlights, with the music of the two losers, destroying the house.
Continuing to destroy the house, which makes me think that this was an Apuestas match and the bet was the loser had to destroy the house.
It had to be. Cause like nothing else makes sense. Cause why else would those two be doing it? Why else would Kripke be so pissed off?
Yeah. I mean, and it wasn't like they were destroying the house and they were like destroying it out of anger. No, they were like destroying it in a very organized fashion.
It was like they had a foreman like beating down their necks.
Yeah. This wall now.
And they weren't using like the barbed wire bat at this point. They were using like official tools. They had sledgehammers and shit. Yeah.
It was amazing. Yeah. I was mystified by the end. So like one thing about me as a wrestling watcher is like 90% of the time when a match finishes, I will just immediately stop watching it. But I am so glad, like something inside me told me like they are continue to watch the last 4 minutes of this video. And I am so glad I did, because you not only get like these guys like begrudgingly destroying this house, which if reviews I read online are to be believed, this belonged to one of the wrestlers.
Oh.
Like I read that somewhere that this was legitimately one of their houses. I have no idea.
That's amazing.
But they're sort of like angrily destroying the house begrudgingly. And then we get this epic credit sequence. Like the only thing I can liken it to is like the credit sequence on MASH where there's like this sad music playing and like cameras are panning around. Like it's unbelievable.
This was a piece of art.
It is. It is 100%. Like, this is, this match, I am so happy I watched, because one of my favorite things about wrestling, and I don't get to do it as often as I would like, is that wrestling is so unique as an art form, which it is, it truly is, that, it makes me think about the whys and the hows of wrestling so much. And I think that matches like this, even though most pro fans probably have never seen this match, like most people that are into New Japan or what have you today probably are not watching IWA Japan house death matches or, you know, whatever. But like, I think this match speaks to something in the Japanese sensibility that is present in current day pro that makes it popular, in that American wrestling and lucha are very much extensions of theatrical performance. Like they are big and bombastic in a way where they are presenting themselves to the back row of the live audience. While Japanese wrestling in some way is more tied to cinematography and cinema. Like this match is like watching a movie, and you get that same feeling when you're watching Onita matches, or when you're watching Okada matches today, that there's something cinematic about it that isn't present in a lot of wrestling from the rest of the world. And I think that's an interesting divide between fans of that style and the fans of the other.
The way I think about it is Japan came out of cinema theater, while the rest of the world came out of stage theater.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, right. Is a point I didn't think we'd get to in this podcast talking about dudes destroying a house. But there we are. So
there we are. Yeah.
So this was a lot of fun. I'll put the link in the description. People, it goes a little long. I think if they cut like this down a little bit, it might have been like the greatest match ever.
15 minutes instead of 18 minutes, it would have been great.
Yeah. But definitely something worth checking out.
I think the thing that like that limits the match in some way, and like I get why they did it, and it's like it's part of the style of the time period, but there are no big set pieces in this match. And I think that if they had built to a set piece at some point, like if someone had fallen off the second floor through a table or something like that, then the time of the match would have felt much more reasonable because there would have been like something more dynamic or escalation based in it. But it's sort of very, everything stays the same level for a lot of
people. Yeah. The TDT on the table is a little anticlimactic. That's for sure.
Right. Yeah. Especially when they do it twice in a row for another reason.
For some reason. Yeah. So check it out. JR, though, it's your turn. What should we watch next week?
So I have picked, so we were going back and forth. I'll give the inside baseball. I have picked Chronic versus the Brothers of Destruction.
Nice.
From Unforgiven 2001. Because I couldn't decide on a match. And you said, just pick something from the WAN worst match of the year ballot. And so that is what I did.
Yeah, I think we should do a series, like mix these in quite a bit, is try to go through and get through all the worst matches of the year.
We can go back. I mean, I'd love to go back through some.
Oh, man, there's some beauties. I was looking through the list the other day. A lot of this I don't remember at all. So we'll get to them.
I have a lot to say about this upcoming match. So we'll record it when we next record.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. Tune in next Monday and you'll be able to hear it
here
on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network.
この試合の勝利で中巻は一体何を得て何を失ったのだろうか。Oh.